When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Thanks for listening to the latest Football Digest podcast, available on all podcast platforms. Subscribe now through Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Acast, or wherever you get your podcasts from, so you don't miss a single episode.
Welcome to Football Digest, now coming to you at the start of every week as we review the best talking points and action from another busy weekend in the Premier League. I'm Ned Keating, your host. And today I am joined by John Cross and Andy Dunn of the Daily Mirror to take a look back at another fairly hectic weekend, a big weekend. Of course, gentlemen, there's only one place to really start, and that has to be at Anfield, doesn't it? A 1-1 draw between two of the big title protagonists this season, Manchester City and Liverpool, both earning a point from Sunday afternoon's match. John, coming to you first, and a fairly straightforward question here, a very simple one, but was it a fair result?
Yeah, I do think it was overall, Ned, really, to be honest. I thought that City were the better team in the first half. And once they went ahead, they had other chances in that first half. I thought they were the dominant force, much more dangerous on the break. I thought they were in control of the game. And that was the key for me. But then second half, I mean, Liverpool really, to equalise so early from that crazy penalty, the reckless back pass and challenge, and basically completely deserved penalty. I just thought Liverpool were going to go on and win the game. Basically, City looked unsettled. And I think City actually deserved huge credit in the last half an hour for kind of almost reasserting themselves, calming down, and basically getting a point at least from a game that previously they might have lost in such circumstances, because they did probably feel a bit aggrieved. And, you know, but I think City first half, Liverpool second half, I think a draw ultimately was a fair result.
And Andy, for you, how did you view the game? What were your main takeaways? Are you in agreement with John there that it was a fair result in the end?
Yeah, very much a fair result. I couldn't agree more, to be honest. Yeah, we were sat next to each other yesterday and we're in agreement, we're in alignment today. Yeah, I thought it was a fair result. And again, that John's assessment of the game, spot on. I actually didn't think that City, having watched the game again, you know, I think City would be a little bit disappointed with how they performed overall. Certainly that period, maybe towards the end of the first half, and certainly for the first 20 minutes of the second half, you know, they didn't, and Pep Guardiola alluded to this, they didn't keep the ball very well. They were rattled. And I think Klopp himself said that he's very rarely seen City basically proud to their stride so dramatically as they were. Oddly enough, and I know that this, you know, we may go on to talk about this scenario, Guardiola taking De Bruyne off, he explained it quite well, what he wanted Kovacic to come on and do, and he actually did it, and they were better after they made those substitutions. Doku was a step up on Alvarez. Kovacic, bizarrely, was a step up on De Bruyne. Those two substitutions, Pep Guardiola must get a lot of credit for that. Those two substitutions, you know, and they could have won the game. Had the one that from Doku gone in off the inside of the post, you know, they could have won the game. So, yes, overall, I think it was a deserved point for each. Again, and both can take the positives out of it. You know, City can take that, well, listen, we didn't get beaten. And when a lot of teams, such was the intensity of Liverpool's approach, such was the febrile nature of the crowd, a lot of teams would have folded when Liverpool got back into that game, and they would have swept aside most teams yesterday. But City held on, but Liverpool themselves will look back and think, hang on a minute, you know, if City played like they did for 20 minutes against us, you know, we were also lucky not to be two or three down the game out of sight. So yeah, all in all, I think, you know, you could not argue against the actual eventual outcome. You might argue about what happened at the end, but, you know, I'm sure we'll come on to that.
We very much will come on to that now, Andy, as well. We will talk about Kevin De Bruyne a little bit more later on, and his reactions being substituted. But for now, we'll talk about the penalty, or the non-award of a penalty, I should say. John, again, pretty simply, what was your view on it? Should Liverpool have had a penalty? Were they unfortunate not to have had one?
I just thought it was a scandal. I think it's incredible that Liverpool didn't get a penalty. I'm absolutely flabbergasted by the lack of a decision. I mean, at the time, we were watching the game and I'm sat next to Andy and I've immediately said, that's a penalty. And basically, he's taken his head off. And basically, okay, he didn't quite take his head off, but he's kicked him. It's a kung fu kick in trying to clear the ball. Anywhere else on the pitch, that is a foul. It's the clearest foul all game. And basically, I just do not know what's happened to Michael Oliver, who is arguably, you know, our best referee in the Premier League, and Stuart Atwell, the VAR. I mean, it's passed two checks effectively, and neither of them have thought it's a penalty. Where does that leave us? I just don't know. Honestly, it's the clearest penalty ever. He's gone to clear it. He's basically clipped a tiny bit of the ball, but then, you know, kind of, he's properly got McAllister in the chest, and basically it's a foul. It is a foul. I literally cannot believe it. And Klopp did well, I think, to kind of contain himself to the degree that he did, really, because he must be so frustrated. It's potentially defining game. I actually asked him that in the press conference, you know, and he did very well, actually, in sort of controlling his anger. And then, you know, sort of kind of come home, see the fallout, and you've got Mike Dean on Sky saying, you know, basically initially saying that's a penalty and then changing his mind when VAR comes up with a different decision, which, you know, to me, I think that almost underlines the value. I'll go the opposite way of why TV companies, I think, are right to have a referee as an expert view. And you might think that's a bizarre one, but honestly, I think it's an insight into the referee's mindset. Basically, how the mindset works, that they don't want to overrule their mate. They don't want to be out of step, unless you're Mark Clattenburg, of course. But, you know, and basically say the opposite to their mate on the pitch or someone in the VAR room that they know. And it's so insightful to me. It really is. And frankly, you know, that's the great value of it. I'm all for referees trying to provide an explanation and an insight on the telly, even when it goes completely the opposite way to natural logic. Honestly, everyone this morning will be thinking, I think, well, obviously, apart from Man City fans, will be thinking, how on earth is that not a penalty? Can you kick someone like that in the penalty box and get away with it? Just think about it. He's kicked him in the penalty box and it's not a penalty. I just cannot believe it.
For the benefit of anyone that's watching along, Andy, I was noticing there as John was giving his response that you were shaking your head and you still look a little bit nonplussed as well in a minute. I'm guessing, are you the other side then?
Yeah. I mean, I, again, this is the one thing we didn't agree on yesterday. I didn't think it was a particularly bad decision from Michael Oliver. I didn't particularly think if he'd have given it, I probably would have said, okay, it's a little bit harsh, but he could have given it. I certainly, in natural play, I just thought it was a high boot. It was coming together. And this idea, and you hear it, and Cross has come out with it now about, oh, anywhere else on the pitch, it's a free kick. It wasn't anywhere else on the pitch. It was in the penalty area. And whether you like it or not, different rules apply in the penalty area. And to be even pretend that they don't is absolutely ludicrous. Of course, different rules apply. You've got to be 100% because you are giving someone that goal scoring opportunity. And basically, you know, I didn't see where McAllister was going. I didn't really think, you know, he was making much of an attempt to get the ball. He came together. The boot was high. Yes, he got the ball. You know, is it the most obvious penalty I've seen denied? Absolutely not. Do I think Michael Oliver had a good game yesterday? Absolutely, I do. Did Klopp restrain himself, as Crosby says? No, he didn't. He confronted Michael Oliver on the pitch in the same way that he refused to shake Chris Cavana's hand. And let's not get carried away by the Klopp loving. Let's not get carried away by this. His attitude towards officials has long left a lot to be desired, and it did yesterday. They shouldn't be allowed onto the pitch to confront officials. Could he have given a penalty? Yes. Was it that type of howler that Cross is saying? Absolutely not the type of howler they're saying. It was a clumsy incident in a penalty area that could have gone either way. Once Oliver doesn't give it, that's absolutely fine. Crack on.
I feel like we can almost devote a whole episode to you two putting forward the cases either way as a judge and jury. But we won't for now. We'll move on to the game and in terms of the performances as well. John, Manchester City seems to have the better of the first half, of course, getting that goal and taking the lead into half-time. Second half, though, Liverpool really seemed to step it up. Was there, do we suspect that they were saying that Jurgen Klopp would have said to him at half-time? You know, because again, you think about it and all the injuries that they've had and the kind of whole narrative around it and the injuries. And yes, they are having players coming back now into the squad. You know, obviously Mohamed Salah coming off the bench yesterday for them. But they're still, you know, stretched with all these injuries. You could forgive them that if they did go a goal behind like they did, that they wouldn't be able to kind of drag themselves back in. But that second half display was much improved on the first half.
Yeah, it was full of guts and determination, wasn't it? I do think the penalty, the equaliser, was a gift. Absolute gift. I mean, Nathan Ake, who has been a really, really good signing for Man City and basically been a bit of an unsung hero in many regards. He's basically had an absolute stinker there. He's played the no-look back pass, I think, and basically, you know, been caught out. And then Ederson injured in the process. And when I think that basically it's 1-1, Ederson has to go off injured, I'm thinking, well, there's only one winner here, and it's going to be Liverpool, really, and they're going to, you know, sweep to victory. Because I'll be honest, I just don't think Ortega has really ever lived up to that kind of billing as a sort of a really fully fledged member of the Man City squad. I don't think he's, you know, well, it'd be impossible to be on the same level as Ederson. I think Ederson's a fabulous goalkeeper. But I think at that point, you know, you're thinking, oh, Liverpool are really going to go on and win the game. And, you know, why has that happened? I think it's happened for various reasons. I don't, you know, I do think the season and the fixture list and the trips probably had an impact on them first half. I thought that City were the better team. But I think if you look at the players who have come through that game, I loved Virgil van Dijk. I thought he was an absolute rock and a leader in defence. I loved Harvey Elliott. I know, Andy, we were talking about it during the game. I thought Harvey Elliott was absolutely terrific. Wouldn't surprise me, surely, if a senior England call comes, you know, he's not too far away. I think he's playing great, you know, absolutely fantastic, either sort of a little bit further forward or kind of attacking midfield, whichever. He always is an absolute dynamo in midfield. I really like him. I think he's really good. And Joe Gomez was a bit of another unsung hero. Starts at left back, tricky first half, survives it, switches to right back when substitutes are made and Robertson comes on. And then who in the last 10 minutes is rampaging forward through midfield? It's Joe Gomez again. Honestly, England have got a bit of an issue at left back. Joe Gomez deserves the shout. Joe Gomez, his renaissance in the last few months has been absolutely fantastic. Deserves huge credit. If you're looking for a kind of, you know, if you've ever played Sunday League, basically the club man is the honour of the guy that sort of fills in all roles, does absolutely everything for the squad. You know, maybe not the star of the show, but gets the club man every year. Well, Joe Gomez is Liverpool's club man by an absolute streak this year. He's filled in at so many different roles. I thought he was fantastic during the game. You know, Gareth Southgate likes him. He's, you know, picked him and played him in the past. We know that. England have got a problem at left back. Call him up, Gareth, because honestly, Joe Gomez is definitely worth an England recall. Even if he kind of, you know, he's missed a utility across that back line, because honestly, he's willing. And I think that epitomised, as much as anything, Liverpool's kind of determination and willingness to haul themselves back in the game. When you've got people like Joe Gomez sitting the standard, I think, you know, with their determination fire, then I think that, you know, Liverpool are going to really push City right the way to the end.
Andy, just on Manchester City now themselves, and as you spoke about earlier this morning, the shall we say, slight disagreement between Pep Guardiola and Kevin De Bruyne as he was substituted. What did you make of that? It's not often that we see, you know, Pep and one of his players, and such a senior player as well, Kevin De Bruyne. It's not often we see, you know, such a disagreement that occurs between Pep and a player. And for it to be someone so senior, it seems a bit strange. Pep was quick to downplay it in his press conference. But again, we're getting towards that time of the season where the pressure starts to really build. And you look at this fixture run for Manchester City, you know, they've got the FA Cup quarterfinal coming up this weekend, played Liverpool yesterday, and they've got Arsenal to come when they return to the Premier League as well. You can forgive them maybe if pressures were perhaps getting to them a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's a fascinating situation. I think that, you know, listen, he had that game of Luton in the FA Cup with, was it three or four assists, I think, for Haaland, and he's done okay since he come back. But I genuinely think that since he's come back from what was a long injury layoff, De Bruyne hasn't been at his best. And I genuinely think that physically he still doesn't quite look up to speed in terms of the defensive duties that Pep Guardiola demands. And no matter what, you know, what the disagreement between him and Pep, it was the right decision. And it was proven to be the right decision. The game at that point was passing Kevin De Bruyne by, you know, and he couldn't keep the ball. I think if you look at his stats, it's probably his worst stats in terms of giving away possession. I think only a, 64% pass completion. Listen, he was good the first 20 minutes when City were playing well, but when they were under the cosh, Kovacic was a more valuable member of the team than De Bruyne was. I understand, and I think obviously De Bruyne's frustration probably was as much to do with being taken off, but also the fact that he realised that at that time that the game was a little bit too much for him. So it was the right decision. I genuinely think that with you referenced City's fixture list there, and I think that there will be, De Bruyne will not be, it seems bizarre to say, an automatic starter for Manchester City from now until the end of the season. I do think he'll use him more sparingly than you'll imagine. If he starts, he might come off. You know, I mean, don't forget De Bruyne is in his 30s now. He had the injury, came back, got injured straight away again. I do think that is something that will take a while to get over. So, and you know, listen, it was him being frustrated. He wanted to affect that game, De Bruyne, which it looked like he might in the first 10 or 15 minutes. He wanted to have a major effect on that game. And he became a peripheral figure, and that's why Guardiola took him off. Just quickly on the overall game and on City's performance, it's interesting when you think now about that game yesterday, and you think about, as John quite rightly says, the performances of Joe Gomez, the performances of Harvey Elliott. I thought McAllister was outstanding. You're talking about the individual performances of Liverpool players. When you think, no one's saying, well, X from City had a good game. De Bruyne didn't have a good game. Foden had a largely frustrating afternoon. Haaland certainly didn't have a good game. You know, even Rodri wasn't at his best. You're actually, I thought Kyle Walker played well, but even he got done a couple of times. So it's a reflection of how good City are, that they've come away with a point, and you're actually thinking, you know what? Name me, who was City's best player yesterday? I mean, you know, it may have been Walker, but you certainly, the people that you think would make a difference. Julian Alvarez, not a good game. I say Haaland, De Bruyne, Alvarez, Silva, Foden, we're all saying they didn't have... All the individuals we are pointing out from yesterday and are highlighting because haven't had good games are all Liverpool players.
Andy, do you think then that Liverpool might look back at this? You know, they'll look at it yesterday and think, oh, well, okay, we went a goal behind. We managed to get a point from the game still. We'll take that in the title race and it could prove the difference. It could be a crucial point. But as you're saying there, because there wasn't many good performances from the City team on the whole, that Liverpool might look back and see this as a missed opportunity then, perhaps.
Yeah, well, they certainly would have seen it as a missed opportunity in the immediate aftermath of the game. As I say, it was such a compelling game and it's such a compelling sort of narrative after the game that you could say that, but you could also turn around and say that City might have been out of sight within, you know, the first quarter of the game. You know, they really might. De Bruyne, that chip could have gone in. Saying if Kyle Walker had played a better ball across, De Bruyne would have scored the far post. So you could say that. It is a missed opportunity to a certain extent because they had the game by the scruff of the neck when it was 1-1. However, I thought Klopp was really interested in what he said. He said it proves to us that we are absolutely in this now. So in other words, and bear in mind, we mentioned injuries. They're coming back now. Bear in mind, Mohamed Salah came on for whatever it was, half an hour. He'll be fit and firing again. You know, Conor Bradley played, and obviously Quansah played. But, you know, they're getting players back. And I think the team that will take momentum out of this, the mythical momentum, the idea, is Liverpool. Is absolutely Liverpool. I think if they have that intensity, the way they played yesterday in that second half, then, you know, it's hard to see them actually losing the game between now and the end of the season.
Just moving on now to some of the other weekend action. And of course, there was no winner at Anfield, which maybe means that the biggest winners of the weekend, John, were Arsenal with their victory on Saturday night, taking them to the top of the Premier League table, 2-1 win over Brentford. A different side, perhaps, though, to Arsenal is what we had to see this time, wasn't it, John? That, you know, we've seen them be so free-flowing in the Premier League of late. The goals really, really flowing for them. But they had to dig deeper and kind of showed a lot of resolve in this match against Brentford to get the victory on Saturday.
Yeah, they did. I thought there's a few things that really struck out to me in watching it. I do think Arsenal ground it out, didn't play particularly well, wasn't free-flowing. Why was that? I think a massive credit to Brentford, who did their absolute best. They're very good at it, very effective. It's not a one-off at disrupting games and disrupting opponents. You know, they do slow it down. They're sort of kind of, you know, sort of quite good at sort of making smart niggly fouls, if you like, and sort of disrupting the game. They're a threat, I think, going forward. I like Brentford, and that is exactly why they will not go down. You know, they're basically, they manage games extremely well, and they were never going to allow Arsenal the same sort of space, I don't think, that they've been afforded in recent games when they've been scoring fives and sixes. I mean, I think the Arsenal fans probably expected that, but they were never, that was never going to happen. They're incredibly well organised and disciplined, and they did break things down. The other thing that I thought was clear, Arsenal missed Gabriel Martinelli so much because his pace absolutely extends defences and has been so key in Arsenal's kind of front line, if you like. His pace is absolutely electric. No one else, you know, in that team gets close to it, I don't think, in terms of his acceleration. And that means then the fullbacks and the sort of kind of the opponents are always that little bit more wary and they play slightly different and he gets in behind and he opens up spaces. And Arsenal missed that. Trossard, I don't think, really played particularly well at all. I think maybe he was trying almost too hard to make a statement because it's a rare opportunity for him. And that dynamic then meant sort of it impinged upon a little bit of the effectiveness of others. And so I don't think Arsenal had that freedom and flow. So they'll be desperate, I think, for Martinelli to play against Porto. And I think that was key. And frankly, the best thing you could say about Arsenal was they kept going and ground it out. I mean, I did feel as if at the end there, Havertz is lucky still to be on the pitch because I'm not in favour of diving. And it was a clear dive at the end and, you know, before. And no wonder Brentford players were upset. One thing I would say is that basically Brentford did their own, dirty tricks, if you like, basically sort of kind of going down injured, sort of kind of, you know, just making the most of things, time wasting, killing the game. So I guess, you know, what is worse? Well, in my book, kind of diving is worse, really. So I think he was a bit lucky. But I do feel as if the first one was never a booking, never in a month of Sundays. But basically, once you have, you know, because I think they're both going for the ball. He's not looking at the opponent. He's clearly looking at the ball. He's using his elbow to project himself. And basically, that's, you know, so I think that was the harsh one. But I think he's got very lucky that he's still on the pitch. But Havertz has been an absolute revelation in recent times for Arsenal and basically is proving what a good, talented player he is and what a valuable member of the squad he is.
Yeah, John, just a little bit more on Kai Havertz there. He's had plenty of critics this season, and even amongst Arsenal fans as well. It took time for him to win them over, having moved from Chelsea. And even when he was at Chelsea as well, he was kind of... There was almost frustrations, I think, even from neutral fans watching him. You could see that he had this talent, but it was just where did he slot in and where did he play even in that Chelsea side? They tried him as a striker, as a false nine winger, central midfielder, and Arsenal as well. He has played in a few different positions, but is he now starting to find that home in this Arsenal team that he can really be effective in matches going forward and could, again, potentially be a big factor in this title race?
Yeah, I do think he is a big factor in the title race because, honestly, it's not just about the winning goal on Saturday, but it's about his recent performances. What I really like about Havertz is that basically he's played that false nine role almost to perfection in that basically he makes runs behind which unlocks space and basically finds space and opens up things for him but also his teammates. He's such a clever player. He's an intelligent player who makes things happen. Listen, when Arsenal signed him, I basically ran out of the amount of Chelsea fans who basically came on and basically said, oh, you'll see, you know, basically, oh, he's the most frustrating player in the world. Well, is he? Is he really? Because I tell you what, I think he's a really good player. I don't think there's much that much frustrating about him. I mean, at Chelsea, he was inconsistent, I would say. But the highs, i.e. the Champions League, surely are kind of worth more, you know, more memories than basically the sort of the lows of kind of, you know, games in which he disappeared and didn't affect it. And basically, it's down to the manager to unlock that potential. I mean, listen, I do think at various points, Arteta could easily accuse him of making it almost a bit of a vanity project, a bit of an ego, really, sort of kind of trip that basically is trying to unlock Havertz in a way that other managers hadn't been able to get the best out of Havertz. Because honestly, if you can't see that there's a brilliantly talented player there, then I'm sorry. I don't know what game, you know, or what sport you're following, but it's certainly not football. I mean, I'm not quite sure that it's Mesut Ozil territory here, but he's a brilliantly talented player who just makes things happen. Great, great character. You can see that in kind of the way he speaks. And I just think he's given Arsenal a different dimension because he can play deeper in midfield, can play as the false nine, can play a little bit more to the left, if you like. Honestly, he's a versatile player. He also, height and sort of ability in the air shouldn't go unnoticed, not just about the goal, but he's also sort of defends well at corners. You know, there's so much to like about Kai Havertz. And, you know, I do think when the season ends and everyone evaluates it, I think he'll go down as a really good signing.
Andy, just going back to Arsenal on the whole and what they'll take from the game, is there a chance that they'll probably take more from this victory over Brentford, where they had to show resolve, you know, kind of really had to fight for it, compared to the games where they've been smashing teams for fun? Yes, they'll get momentum from that, but this teaches them that when the going gets tough, they really can do it, and that could be crucial in the title running.
Yeah, possibly. I'm not entirely sure about that. I mean, the impression I got, and bear in mind this was only me watching it on a TV screen, the impression I got was that it was quite fraught. You know, and I'm thinking, well, if you're fraud now, and if you're, you know, there seemed to be quite a bit of nervousness around the Emirates, from what I could see, as I say, only on TV, it seemed quite nervy, quite anxious. And I thought, well, if it's like that now, what's it going to be like, you know, in 3 or 4 games' time? So whether or not I think they'll take more from it, I doubt they'll take more from it. It's a crucial win, but obviously next up in the league, they're off to the Etihad, you know, which will be a defining game without a doubt. But, you know, listen, Arsenal playing well, and you're not going to smash teams 4 or 5 every single week. City don't, Liverpool don't, and Arsenal won't. And I think if we look at generally at the fixture list on the left, the 10 games for each club, you know, it's so difficult to call. I don't think either of them will drop many points. I think Arsenal won't drop many points either. But did I think it's a boost that they won in that way? Not really. Did I think they looked a bit nervy? Yes, I do. And that will only be natural because you wouldn't be human if you've been through what they went through this stage last season and that was on your mind.
Gentlemen, I'm going to upset people who maybe were hoping to listen to us talk about the relegation battle instead this morning, but instead end with your thoughts and your predictions for the title race. Of course, that's such a pivotal weekend in the title race, and we're going to have another one at the end of the month as well. John, where do you see things standing now? Has it changed your mind on who will go all the way, who will be lifting the trophy come May, or is it the same thoughts as before the weekend?
No, I think this weekend has actually strengthened my belief that Manchester City will win the title. I think that I've thought that from day one. I still think on the back of Anfield, where they could have easily had a wobble, arguably did have a wobble at 1-1. And I thought they showed great mental strength and resilience to kind of come through that test. And yes, they survived a big late penalty shout, but I think they are the red hot favourites, largely because of one thing, and that thing is experience. They know what it takes to win the title. They know what it takes to kind of keep winning back-to-back games. They'll go on a winning streak, I've no doubt about it. I've looked at the kind of all three of their, you know, the contenders and they're sort of running. I think arguably Arsenal have the hardest. They've still got to go to City. They've still got to go to Tottenham. They've still got to go to Man United. And I think that, you know, that's the hardest one. They are playing well, or had been certainly, you know, free flowing until Saturday. I think that sort of Liverpool's chase for 4 trophies might take its toll, particularly with their kind of, you know, injury problems, really. But the clock factor gives them an edge because they want to turn it into a glorious farewell tour. I just think in all of that, I think City know what it takes. You know, treble winners last year. They want to make a sort of kind of history with a fourth consecutive title this year. I think that's their motivation. And I think City have just got that extra bit of quality, extra bit of know-how, and I think that's what will ultimately get them over the line.
And Andy, for you, how do you see the title race going now?
For Liverpool, well, I think Liverpool win the Premier League. I genuinely think that players coming back, with Salah back, with Van Dijk in imperious form, I look at their fixture list, and it would not surprise me if they were to win all 10 remaining games. They're on a hell of a run of form. Anfield is a fortress like no other in the Premier League. Klopp's flying. He's got the kids in reserve who can come in and do a job. I generally think, you know, I think City are vulnerable. And they showed yesterday they're vulnerable. Defensively, saying a little bit casual. I think subconsciously their priority will be to defend that Champions League title, which will be a remarkable achievement. And I think Arsenal might just drop the odd point. And I think Liverpool, I genuinely think they'll probably be faultless until now, the end of the season. Liverpool, for me, will win the title.
Of course, it will be fascinating to see how the title race shapes up over the coming weeks. And a reminder again that you can keep up to date with all the latest from it, as well as all the latest from the rest of the world of football across the Daily Mirror, Daily Star and Daily Express websites. Also, be sure to check out on Thursday Football Digest Extra Time, a new date for that show as we look ahead to the weekend's Premier League action. John and Andy, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate your time as always. But all that's left for me to do is wish you goodbye.